Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Later this hour, we talk with the author and the illustrator of In the Wake of the Willows, a sequel to the 1908 classic The Wind in the Willows. But first, the 25th annual Nantucket Film Festival kicks off today. And as you might guess, there are some changes to the format this year. The good news is they have a fantastic lineup of films, and you don't have to be on Nantucket to catch them. Basil Thisiokas is the film program director at the Nantucket Film Festival. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Many film festivals pulled the plug this year. What were some of the considerations you and your colleagues made about whether to cancel or run the festival this year?
Well, we know that the festival is an important part of the cultural landscape of Nantucket, and we thought very hard and long about what to do. We thought maybe about trying to move it later in the summer in some form with the hope that there would be the ability to do it live. But ultimately, we've come up with a plan to do this online festival now and then come back to the island later in the summer for the drive-in. There'll be a drive-in set up by the Dreamland Theater, one of our partners there, and we're hoping to be able to do a couple of nights of programming there as well. So it's kind of having the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Now, the good news is that the festival can be enjoyed without having to be on Nantucket. So explain how it will work.
Sure. So we have decided this year to do a online festival. It's smaller than our usual festival, but we still were able to put together a lot of great content for people to take a look at home. It's called NFF Now at Home, and we're presenting 12 feature-length films, 3 short film programs, recorded Q&As with filmmakers, as well as 3 of our signature conversations with noted personalities. We call those are In Their Shoes. And those this year are with the Oscar-winning screenwriter Eric Roth, who wrote Forrest Gump, and with Norman Lear, the iconic television creator, as well as the improv comedy duo Middleditch and Schwartz, who just recently released a series of specials on Netflix.
Wow, that sounds exciting. We're also joined by Marlon Johnson. He's the director of the feature film River City Drumbeat. Welcome, Marlon.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I've only seen the trailer for the film, but after hearing the drumming and seeing the energy and enthusiasm of those kids performing, I was sold. So give us a synopsis of the film.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, the film really is a feature-length doc that chronicles a music arts institution in West Louisville, Kentucky. The co-founder of the group, River City Drum Corps, is Ed White, and we follow him during his last year. He's about to retire, but he's been teaching kids music and culture and really saving the lives of these kids from this institution. He turns the program over to another gentleman who has also been saved by the program. And so we chronicle them for a year during this transition. And it's about love, it's about mentorship, and about the redeeming qualities of art.
Yeah. And we have the trailer from the film. Let's give a listen.
Question my ancestors,
names I may not know,
whose names I may not know,
in respect for their great struggles,
and respect for their great struggles,
that I struggle to grow,
that I struggle to grow.
Our culture is going to be our savior. If we tap back into their culture, you'll find out that's where the power is at.
The drumming is amazing. Now, how did you come across the story of Mr. White and the drummers?
Well, actually, I'm co-partners with another director, Anne Flatte, and we had done some work on a music doc here in Miami. I'm originally from Miami, and she's out of San Francisco, but she was here. We partnered up and really hit off quite well. And she has a producing partner who's actually from Louisville, Owsley Brown, and he knew of the River City Drum Corps and always wanted to do something with them. And so when Mr. White, the co-founder, decided that he was going to retire, it really was an opportunity to bring together some filmmakers who could really tell this story. So it was pretty much the relationship that he had with the Drum Corps, with Mr. White, that really set it off.
Now, most kids are just taught about slavery and civil rights when units on African-American history are in the curriculum. There's so much that's left out. Can you describe how connecting with the art, culture, and traditions of their African-American ancestors impacts these kids?
Yeah, well, I think for me, seeing the kids really be influenced by, you know, African culture and African-American culture, it really gives them a sense of empowerment. You know, when you are able to talk about history and about culture, and it's about people who look and sound like you, that's very impactful. A lot of times, kids in this, in these type of areas are really giving kind of a narrow view of their history. And so when you're able to widen or broaden that view, you're able to kind of reimagine your own existence. And that's really powerful.
Yeah, you mentioned Albert, who has taken over running the group. Tell us a little bit about Albert.
Albert is a very cool dude. He is a father. He is an artist. He is currently now the director of River City Drum Corps. He is figuring out his place in the world, like we all are. I saw a lot of myself. You know, I'm a little bit older than Albert, but I saw a lot of myself in him as he navigates both kind of the business world, still being an artist, being a father, being an African-American male in this world, and navigating all of those different truths.
Louisville, Kentucky erupted in protests following the police killing of Breonna Taylor last month. Have you been in touch with any of the kids or their parents since then? And what has been their response? You know, how are they holding up?
Yeah, well, I've been in touch with both Mr. White and Albert and some of the high school kids that we follow in the film as well. And they have a definite sense of urgency to the situation that's going on in Louisville, Kentucky right now, kind of all eyes on that community. There's a sense of obligation to do right by some, the victims in that community and what that means and their role in it. There's also a sense that, you know, Louisville, and we talk about it in the film, is really two communities, very, very separated in many senses. And there's a great deal of trepidation as a result of that. And they're trying to bring those two worlds together, bring those two understandings together. And so they have a challenge and they seem to be up for it. So.
The film is River City Drumbeat, directed by Marlon Johnson. It'll be screened as part of the Nantucket Film Festival, which you can stream from home this year. Marlon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up after a break, we'll talk about a film that's about the journey of a transgendered comedian. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about changes to the format of the Nantucket Film Festival this year and talking about some of the films that will be screened. With us is Basil Tsiokas. He's the program director of the film festival. Well, there's so many great films made outside of Hollywood that don't make it to most cinemas. What are you looking for as you make selections for the films for the festival?
That's a great question. You know, we have always looked for films that are celebrating storytelling and screenwriting. That's the mission of the festival, to sort of highlight that aspect of filmmaking. And so, you know, there obviously are amazing films that come out of Hollywood, but there are so many other films that come from other places that don't get the ability to reach audiences as widely. So we are always, that's the first thing on our mind. So I'm particularly focused on documentaries in general for other festivals that I work for. So I also really am drawn to stories that are really authentic and are surprising and tell you something fresh and new that you didn't know before.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like the documentaries myself as well. And there's so many interesting films that we really only get to see at film festivals that, you know, don't come across our radar screen otherwise. And this next film that we're going to talk about is The Journey of a Transgendered Comedian. The film is Julia Scotti, Funny That Way, and the director, Susan Sandler, joins us. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Tell us a little bit about Julia.
Julia Scotti is an incredible life force comedian who began a career as Rick Scotti, and had a really important career performing with contemporaries like Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock in the 80s, and transition to the time when people didn't understand what gender dysphoria was, and the consequence of that moment in time, lost everything that was in her life, including contact with her children for 15 years. And this film looks at Julia's comeback in her 60s, her triumphant comeback and her incredible voice and her sense of authenticity and truth and living inside of comedy that is irresistibly important and delicious all at the same time.
So we have a clip from the film that I think will give listeners a sense of Julia. Let's take a listen.
Great.
And I was married when I came out. Boy, you should have been there for that conversation. I took her to a nice restaurant out in the open because I wanted eyewitnesses, you know. And I said to her, honey, listen, there's something I have to tell you. And she goes, is it another woman? Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Then it came to telling my kids. I cannot tell you how difficult that was. And it wasn't the best of circumstances that I told them. I had been trying to find the words to get out to say it for a couple of months, but they began to notice that my nails were growing and I was taking the hormones. They started us off on my face a little bit. So I reached this point where I couldn't avoid my truth anymore. It was there. It was in my face. And I was about to kill their father.
Now, Julia is a performer. She's not shy about making her comedy personal. Did she have any reservations about sharing certain aspects of her story for the film?
This was a five-year process of winning Julia's trust and friendship, and very, very sweetly and importantly for the premiere here on Nantucket, it began here on Nantucket. I met her after she performed an incredible concert at the Dreamland Theater, which is the home of the Nantucket Film Festival in its normal stage. And we began talking about a one-woman show, and I was going to work with her on that. And as I understood the breadth of her story and that her children had just come back into her life and that her story lived through the archival materials of her early career, it became really clear that documentary was the path to telling that story. And the process over this five-year period has been to be a part of that journey. And her ability to let me inside of that and to be a part of that journey has been a real honor and privilege, and I feel very grateful to be bringing that film back to Nantucket.
Yeah, there's a moment in the film when Julia is watching old clips from her comedy performances when she was still Rick. Let's give a listen.
Did you see Geraldo a couple weeks ago in Andy's Transsexual Zone?
Yeah, where this is.
These guys? They are. I mean, the first they were ugly guys, now they're ugly women. Huh? And you see that they got like, tons of makeup on their face, and with a beard grown through the makeup. You know? And then some of them really look like women, you know, but they never change their voice.
Uh-oh.
Because Geraldo says, so why do you want to become a woman? They go, well, you know,
you probably just fast forward.
Whoa, wait, I got, Jesus, let me see that again. Wait.
Did you see Geraldo a couple weeks ago in Andy's Transsexual Zone? What the hell is wrong with these guys?
My God,
you know, I mean,
shut up.
First they were ugly guys, now they're ugly women.
Shut up.
And you see that they got like, tons of makeup on their face and with a beard grown through the makeup. You know? And then some of them really look like women, you know, but they never change their voice. I mean, because Geraldo says, so why do you want to become a woman? They go, well, you know, I always wanted to be a woman, Geraldo.
Wow. Yeah.
Even
I told
as a
you.
Child, I know I wanted to be a woman.
I was having issues.
It's not often that we come face to face with the person we used to be. It's
yeah.
interesting that when someone suggests skipping over that difficult moment, Julia says no, she wants to hear it. She's willing to go there. Talk a little bit more about that scene.
This was a scene where I had put together sections of archival material from the, you know, sometimes not very well preserved that comedians have of their work. And in putting together that material, I found this clip that was extraordinarily revelatory in terms of what Rick was struggling with in terms of his identity at that moment and working out on stage, which is what comedians can do in terms of figuring out what's going on in their lives. So when I found that clip and shared it with Julia, and she's sharing it in the scene with her son, who's also interested in comedy and writes sketch comedy, it was revisiting a moment that she had forgotten that was really naked, what she was struggling with. And that's part of the journey of the film. We see Julia working on material that is all about the moment that she's living through, some of which are very dramatic and very open at the same time. And I think that's where good comedy lives in truth.
Hmm. Did Julia want to have a part in the editing of the film, or was she willing to hand it over to you completely?
It was complete trust, and it was very exciting to show the first cut to her and to see how moved she was and how much she felt that it really embraced her life in an honest way. And that authenticity is everything that I was hoping to achieve, and so felt really honored that we got there.
The film is Julia Scotti, Funny That Way, directed by Susan Sandler, part of this year's Nantucket Film Festival, now at home through June 30th. We'll post links with more information about the films at our website, capeandislands.org. Susan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Basil, I want to ask you, aside from these two films that we've just been talking about, what are some of the other films that you're really excited about?
Yeah, we have, thanks for asking. We have such great films in the festival in addition to those two fantastic ones. I'd love for people to take a look at this really great film about Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, as viewed through the lens of the role music has played in his life. It's called Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President. Fantastic film. It's a different way of approaching looking at a presidency. Like, I've never seen that done before, and it works really well. It's super entertaining as well. A narrative film that we have is a sort of present-day sci-fi film in a way called Lapsus, which looks at sort of modern-day gig economy through sort of a working-class lens. Really fascinating film and definitely worth checking out. And if I threw out another one, I'd say The Mole Agent, which is a film that wowed audiences at Sundance earlier this year. That one is fascinating. It's a documentary about a 93-year-old man who is brought on as an undercover spy to infiltrate a retirement community. it's super funny at times, but also very poignant. It's set in Chile. Fantastic film, and I encourage audiences to watch that one as well.
Now, how far in advance do you start putting these films together? Like, when this ends June 30th, are you already looking at next year's? Or, how far in advance do you have to plan these things?
To be honest, because, the festival is in June. We pretty much begin, we do other things during the year. We have a NFF Now, the program that inspired this at home, that runs year round to bring films to the island. But for the festival itself in June, we're looking at starting around September, typically when the Toronto Film Festival kicks off. That's kind of the beginning of the cycle for us. And a lot of films that we will scout will be films that come out of Sundance, South by Southwest, Tribeca, et cetera. So it's kind of that sort of end part of the year, and then the beginning of the next year is when we're really looking at work.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned at the beginning of our interview that you were looking at possibly doing something outside later in, was it September, did you say?
Actually, no. It's sometime in the summer.
In the summer.
As early as next month, maybe early August. Depends on when the Dreamland Street Drive-In really it kicks in.
Yeah. Do you know what the film will be yet, or are you keeping that?
We don't yet. It's a question of really what might be available that time, or if it might be a sort of audience favorite, sort of like a classic film that would work well in an outdoor setting. So we'll see. We'll make further announcements about that as we kind of work out our plans.
Yeah. And again, in case somebody missed it, you can do the festival at home, wherever home is this year, right?
Yeah, so people can purchase passes to NFF Now at Home on our website, nantucketfilmfestival.org. They're just $75, and you get access to all the films and all the conversations. You can access it as long as you are in the United States, you have the right kind of setup to do it. But it's pretty accessible to everybody, which is something we love, to be able to spread the films to the entire United States, not just the Cape and Islands area this year.
Yeah, and we'll post links with more information about the festival and how to stream the films at our website, capeandislands.org. Basil Theokas, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Coming up after break, we talk with the author and the illustrator of In the Wake of the Willows, a sequel to the 1908 classic The Wind in the Willows.